All right, and we're live. Welcome back to the Loopcast. Today on the Erica Maternity Leave Tour, we have another star guest, a Catholic Vote favorite, longtime employee, all-around star. We have Kara Moan. Kara, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Tom and Josh. This is awesome.
So, Kara, if you want to get you've been on before, so for the people that are real Loopcast fans, they've seen you before. But if you want to give a brief introduction of you, what you do, where you're from, how long you've been with Catholic Vote.
Oh, gosh. Okay. So I have been with, from the Chicago area, I have been with Catholic Vote for 15 years. I do not feel old enough to say that, but alas, I am.
I mean, we hired you at like 15, right?
So exactly. I think
it we just broke goes some to child show. Labor laws.
We hired me at 15. We hired Tom Pagasik at 15. So it's
That's right. That's right.
We start him young. Mm-hmm. And I am in Dallas, Texas now. And I have the great honor of traveling the western half of the United States and talking one-on-one with our donors who very often become good friends of mine. And I share with them how they can specifically help with the mission and what we're doing and building here at Catholic Vote. And it's one of the greatest honors of my life. So
that's awesome.
What we've got going on here at Catholic Vote is awesome, and we're going to change the world.
Amen.
Let's do it.
Do you have a favorite spot out west? See if any listener.
You know, I have to say two things. I love Phoenix, and I love the Pacific Northwest. Okay. I think the Pacific Northwest was one that I wasn't expecting to love. Based on everything you hear, but really, I think it's kind of one of the best kept secrets, the just beauty that's out there. And the people are so nice and down to earth. And so I always love anytime I get to go to Seattle or go ahead, Josh.
Well, you mentioned Phoenix. I went through the Southwest, but man, it was like 20 years ago. And only after I left New Mexico did I hear about the staircase, the miraculous staircase in Santa Fe. And I'm like, oh, man, I missed that. So I got to make a point
trip
of getting back there.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, Santa Fe is awesome. And the staircase is really cool. You have to pay to get in. I know. So there's lots of places like that. That's the other cool thing about my job is that when I do those things, I was in San Francisco area, and I got to go visit some of the chapels and, which is really awesome. So I get
mission churches you're talking about.
Yes, exactly.
Too. Yeah.
So I have all sorts of stories, travel stories from things I get to stop in and see, while I'm there. So the miracle staircase is pretty cool.
There's a Catholic joke about pay to get in, right? Somewhere in there.
Well, it's not the Catholic Church doesn't own that the chapel to Our Lady of Loretto where the miraculous staircase is anymore because there's so many tourists. I think it's an independent thing now. So I'm not gonna. It's not a sacrament. If you want to see the staircase, and they need to keep the chapel, you know, going or whatever. So I don't know. This is a
crazy story. I don't usually tell this one, but I was it was Carmel by the Sea. And there is some old mission churches there. And I had a free couple hours. And so I went in, wanted to go see it. So I stop in. They ask you basically to pay $10 to get in. And I said, I'm just making a visit to Jesus in the church there. And the guy said, what do you mean? And I said, well, do you have the Eucharist in the chapel? And he said, what's that? I looked at him and I'm like looking around at the line and the guy says, oh, are those the two big new candle things that we got? I kid you not. And I was like, at that point, I just paid the $10 and I was like, okay. But
I was going to say, you should have just fired him on the spot and then you could have just run the show.
The cool part about that story is I walk in and I did not know that Juniperus Serra is buried there. So I was like, okay, I guess I paid the $10, but there's a cool museum and all that stuff.
Definitely worth it.
So
Father
I remember,
of California.
Shout out to my mom. They visited Italy and Croatia this past year. And Croatia is actually a super Catholic country. But she was telling me how sad it was in so many places in Europe where they traveled. They would go to churches similar to that, and you'd have to like pay a little bit or whatever. And my mom is like a serious Catholic, for those who don't know, was like, I want to see the Eucharist. Like, where's the Eucharist? I want to go pray. I want to go pray to God. And that almost was like a foreign concept to a lot of the tour guides or people that kept it. They're like, people don't come here for that. This is like a museum where they check it off a list. Like, it's just kind of sad. We've lost that, like that part of the history. That's real.
Sometimes when you do that, though, and you say, I'm just here for Mass, and then they let you go to Mass, and you can go to Mass for free, and then when you're done, you can tour the church.
Oh, true.
Anyway,
True, but she just had, and of course some, like, cool experiences come from trying to seek out Jesus, as you did, Kara. Like, she kind of had some, like, adventures of, like, kind of being led into certain places randomly, seemingly, and, of course, running into Jesus in the Eucharist, which is cool. But I have to say, Kara, man, the fans are in the chat, all right? We have Leslie.
I don't even have that up.
Shout out to Leslie Sargent. She's like, Kara, led me to see me.
Leslie's in Phoenix.
I mean, come on now. What better endorsement could you get? We got some Kara hands up emojis. Yeah, amazing. Yeah. So I have to say this. If you want to come hang out with us live, the numbers grow. It's a lot of fun. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 11 a.m. Eastern time, we will be live here on YouTube. Talk about what we talk about. So I appreciate everyone that's here today. Leave a like. Say hi to us in the chat. We do see
Except
that.
Not Friday, this Friday, because Good Friday, obviously.
Not this Friday, correct. We know that. And then also Easter Monday, we will not be live, but we will have some content up. I will be spending that with my lovely in-laws. I'm very much looking forward to celebrating Easter. So this is a great opportunity. We have Kara on the show, okay? So the big headline that I was hoping to discuss was a Washington Post article known for really serious and intelligent reporting these days. They had a headline called Women Are Getting Off Birth Control Amid Misinformation Explosion.
Misinformation.
And so I was just flabbergasted reading through this article, because they had a lot of parts in air quotes, or not air quotes, actual quotes. Things like wanting to be, quote, more natural, or, quote, harms to women perceived.
Yeah.
And it was like, we live in two different worlds. The basic premise of the article was, they said it's these nasty conservative influences are saying things like hormonal birth control can change who you're attracted to. It can lead to weight gain. It can mess with your fertility. I think they said it can mess with fertility, which was a hilarious sentence to say out loud, because, of course, that's the point. But long-term fertility as well, I think, was the implication of getting off of it.
Right.
And so they kind of smeared these conservatives. They actually felt so strongly these, and it was written by two misinformation experts, of course. They went over to TikTok and said, hey, take down these TikToks that we saw of people saying exactly what I just said. And TikTok did, which is another interesting part to the whole story. But I'm happy that we have a female presence. That's kind of the Loopcast characteristic that we unfortunately lost when Erica is down. But we bring on Kara, which is another female guest. Was this article surprising to you to see such an out of touch take, or was this kind of just what you expected from Washington?
I mean, it's kind of what you expect from someplace like the Washington Post. I will say that it is true that there is a lot of misinformation out there. So that's the one, I guess the stop clock is right twice a day, right? But biggest piece is that women, we are being misinformed, but it's by doctors and big pharma. So that's kind of the joke when you read between the lines of what's happening there. So it was a crazy article to read. So
I mean, and it's to me, it's like, you know, the whole purpose of taking this is to convince a woman's body that she's pregnant, therefore she won't actually get pregnant. That's the whole purpose of the hormonal birth control. And if it would have some certain side effects, like, you know, potentially weight gain, or maybe it would just, you know, by changing your hormones, change who you get attracted to. That's not that crazy of a hypothesis. I don't know if it's true or not. I mean, I've heard people say that, but with regards to like that it would have secondary effects on your body, like, you know, that you would have weight gain or something else like that. Like, how is that crazy? Like, of course, if you take a bunch of hormones, it might have other effects on your body. Like, how do we not think that's the case? It's not like a magic pill. Like, it obviously is doing something to the body. I don't understand why they think this is so bizarre.
Go ahead, Tom. Sorry, Tom.
I was going to say I can. So if Big Red, if we can scroll down on some of the doctors that they talked to, interesting sets that they used for the pictures. There's one doctor in particular that said that women were being misled by these influencers, getting off birth control, getting pregnant, and then coming to him for abortions. And so if you take a look, I don't know if we can zoom there, but you see a little trans flag in his background. Very interesting. I think that...
That's a doctor who puts ideology before medicine anyway.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Misinformation guy, big misinformation guy, I guess. Facts are important. Sign here. Awesome. I think what's the real crazy thing is none of this is natural, of course. Most of this was invented in the past 50 years, probably. And so the
well, the pill 1960, so we're getting a few more years on that. But yeah, I mean, and the thing is, like, it's just, like, I just find it so hilarious that just as more and more Americans are trying to move towards organic foods and get away from processed garbage, fast food, all that other stuff, they want more natural foods. And yet now we're starting to see some people second guess, hey, wait, why are we pumping our body full of all these hormones? And you see Big Pharma, you see the Washington Post, the corporate media freaking out about this. Like, wait mm-hmm. a minute, how mm-hmm. dare you question this? The pill is everything that they depend on to create this world that they've created where people feel that they can have sex without consequence. And, you know, a steady workforce, that's what they care about. They don't care what effects it might have on women's bodies. So
I also think that reading through the article reminded me, it kind of gave me flashbacks to COVID because it felt very much like being gaslit through the whole article. Like people, oh no, you're not experiencing these side effects. You're not being, these things are not true. And that's a lot of what happened during COVID is you're being almost gaslit by these doctors saying, oh no, like this is totally safe, totally natural, blah, blah, blah. Well, I don't know. There's many women out there who honestly have no idea how the female body works, and it's so beautiful, and God is really a great creator when you break down all the different aspects of it. But of course, like the female body has hormone receptors all over the place. So when you start taking and jacking the body up on hormones, then you're going to have a lot of side effects. That's duh.
And why don't they be honest?
You are going to have migraines. You are going to have weight gain. You are going to have like all these different side effects. And for some doctor to be saying like that's not going to happen, like now,
well, women.
And it doesn't necessarily happen for everyone, I suppose. But the whole point is like anytime you take anything like this, you would want to know what are the side effects so that if you start to say, wait a minute, why has my mood changed a ton? Or why, you know, I feel like I'm getting suddenly a lot more weight than I normally do. Like maybe it doesn't happen for everyone, but at least you know the trade-offs, you know, but like the idea that you have to hush everything. Oh, no, this is a very good thing and we can't say anything bad about it. I just think that's so silly.
Yeah. Like, I mean, even this might be a little personal, but there's even times where when you learn about the natural cycle of your body and the different, how different hormones peak and go down and all the different stuff, like there's definitely times in a month where I feel like, everyone's annoying me. Like everyone's annoying me. And I'm like, I'm ready to freak out at whenever someone says something wrong or doesn't do whatever. And then
in fairness, those are the times that you're probably interacting with me and Josh.
That's true.
Maybe you, Tom. I don't know.
But like when you step back and like realize, okay, what is like, what's going on? Then you realize, oh, these are hormones. These are like, it empowers me because it gives me the ability to say like, okay, settle down. Don't like, this is my body doing its thing. And in 2 days, 3 days, whatever, it'll be fine.
As opposed to me where I'm a jerk every day of the month.
You know exactly. What I mean?
Yeah. But Carrie, you said something really beautiful there, I think, actually. Like, it makes you.
Yeah.
You are, like, and so by taking this hormonal birth control, which will obviously change your makeup, think how people with bipolar disorder, how crazy, like, your hormones are you. It changes your mood. It changes how you act. It changes what you think. And so to take something that, by its express purpose, will change your hormonal makeup, changes you. And so, I mean, there's stories of people...
To take it a step further, like, why is it that women have that? Because in God's beautiful design. Like, we are the only ones who can create and grow a life. Like, so it's our bodies that are changing based on wanting to hear messages from our hormones across our body. Like, yeah, of course, when a woman's pregnant, it changes her brain chemistry. It changes, like, literally everything about you changes when you are growing a life. And so I think that's the beauty of hormones. And when you start suppressing that and messing with it, it totally changes everything.
Yeah. So. And if I may, like, so we're having this conversation, of course, this doesn't really make a ton of logical sense, whether it be such a hard push to get this to kids as early as 14. And I think really the explanation that makes the most sense to me is that women, not only from the government side of, like Josh was saying, like to get in the workforce, but from a big pharma perspective of getting girls as early as 14 hooked on hormonal birth control up until the point where they want to have children. And then even post that, like well into their 40s, that's a long time to be buying a prescription of anything. And then so I know people, I think a lot of people probably know women or girls in their life that as soon as they start getting acne when they're 14, a doctor comes to them and says, oh, just get on hormonal birth control. Or
you know, another thing, what you mentioned, Tom, you mentioned about how the Washington Post went to TikTok and had them remove these videos. And it reminded me the 60 Minutes did an interview just the other weekend here where they talked to this lady who's a fact checker. And she contacts the different social media companies and tells them what they got wrong or whatever. And this lady just cracked me up. And all, you know, it's just, again, where these people go to these social media outlets and say, I don't want anyone to find out about this. I want it suppressed. And, it, you know, I think that's disturbing. I mean, it's something uniquely un-American to try to convince people to not to suppress their thoughts. Mm-hmm. And you think to yourself, like the corporate media, they much preferred it when the FBI was running Twitter. They don't like it that a Free Speech Act guy now runs Twitter. And so, you know,
and the other element to all this is crazy is like they're trying to make this seem like a right wing conservative thing. The original people against the birth control pill were liberal feminists in the 70s during the Nelson mm-hmm. pill hearings. They were threatening their life and reputation to be like, people are dying from blood clotting, from estrogen being pumped in their bodies. Like, this is actually killing women. And of course, maligned and offended by all the big pharma advocates because they have a lot of pull and lobbying in D.C. But this isn't a right or left thing. This is a women thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you get those unique circumstances. So like back then it was the pill where Catholics and feminists were in agreement, like this is bad news. And then pornography was another one of those where Catholics were like, this is bad news. And the feminists were like, yeah, this is exploitative. And it's the feminists that eventually over time changed their tune on those, on both of those issues, and have no real objections to either of them, really, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. I know a lot of women who they started on birth control at 14, 15 for underlying issues like acne or whatnot. And then they go through the whole process of not knowing how their cycle works, not knowing anything. I mean, there was a post I saw on Twitter earlier this week of a woman saying she did not know that you could only get pregnant a couple days a month. And that, like, she's been on birth control her whole life. Like, she had no idea that was something that
the assumption how your for body a lot of works. People, because any day you could get pregnant, right?
Right, crazy. Because you just, they are put on this and they're not told the information. And it's almost, it's kind of like big government psyop of like, oh, we don't want them to know the information, so we're going to put them on birth control, keep them dumb and stupid.
Yeah, it's
and
interesting.
I think that young women everywhere are really kind of trying to take things back. Not only is birth control a class one carcinogen, but like they're really trying to look at
real deal.
Look at like being healthier and more natural. And it's just,
well, so just to you know, to explain what you're saying there about understanding fertility, I mean, that's what I find the Catholic Church's understanding of fertility and why we're in favor of life and against artificial contraception. What happens is that a husband and a wife start to understand their fertility a lot better. And there's a lot more education and awareness, fertility awareness. And so for my wife and I, you know, we had 6 wonderful children and kind of quickly within, you know, 9 years. And then after that, you know, my wife had a bit of a health condition. She had a lot of headaches, intracranial hypertension, or I forget what the name of it was. And it was a pretty serious matter. And so we had fertility awareness though. And so we were able to make sure like, okay, we're not sure at this point that it'd be healthy for her to become pregnant. And so even though my wife and I would have loved to have had 8, 9, 10 kids, maybe we had that fertility awareness. We knew exactly what, you know, how to respond, you know, to our bodies. And, you know, there sometimes people, when it comes to like natural family planning, they have this crazy notion. Oh, you mean you have no free will. You have no understanding of what's going on. You just have to have a lot of kids as if you're rabbits or whatever. And that's not the case at all. What the beauty of understanding, you know, of natural family planning, understanding, having that fertility awareness, I think is actually a wonderful gift. And the assumption here is because of this, fertility is a gift. It's not something to be, you know, considered that needs a cure. I think it's a blessing, and it's an understanding that husbands also need to understand. Oh, just because you get married, that means you get to have unlimited amounts of sexual activity. It's like no. There's a give and take in any relationship or whatever.
Yeah, so, hold up. I think Ariel Waterhouse got maybe banned or something for saying, I guess I'm not supposed to type pregnant or condominium. I'm not sure how that would interact to the conversation. Cracked me up. But yeah, back to the human dignity element, Josh. The problem with birth control is it fundamentally erodes the dignity of women, not just from understanding their own beauty and power, but also from a man's perspective of being able to use women for their own pleasure, or right. even in the and this is where I think the Catholic Church is like really good on this and needs to stay strong in this. That can happen even within the context of a marriage. And that's the whole argument against contraceptions is like contraceptives is that you use that as a way to erode the dignity of your married relationship, of your intimacy, being fully in union with each other. And that's a really hard thing for people to swallow. But I think in living that myself, I see so much of the wisdom of that. And it's really, I think, grown my wife and I closer together and like allowed us to respect each other, the real like power of each other, like how we were created and what we now can co-create through that power is really a cool thing. We could probably talk about this all day. That's a really cool topic. But we gotta talk bridges. Bridges are falling down. First off, I just gotta say rest in peace to anyone that I think six people lost their lives in the Francis Scott Key bridge collapse. Really tragic. Pray for the repose of their souls. Conspiracy theories are running wild.
The thing is, we have to be most thankful for. I mean, it was a tragedy, as you say, six people died. Horrible that it happened, but in a sense, thankfully, it happened at 1 a.m. or whatever. Can you imagine if that would have happened like at, you know, at
in the middle of the afternoon?
Even
rush hour,
dusk or something, or rush hour. Yeah.
From what I understand, the Mayday call went out too, and that helped keep cars off the bridge too. Because if that was a packed bridge, it's crazy. I what always comes to mind is the Mackinac Island, or like the Mackinac Bridge in Michigan. I'm a Michigan boy, but seeing this bridge, just a massive bridge collapse, was just a shocking visual.
I think it was over a mile long.
Yeah, like I could give a quick synopsis. So actually, we got some connects here at the Loopcast. We have someone on the team that actually worked in disaster management in Florida. So she had a really interesting perspective on all of this as someone that's kind of worked in the role where if something like this happens, she's kind of the one acting. So a quick synopsis, the bridge was struck at 1:30 a.m. on Tuesday. It was a 1.6-mile bridge in the I-695 Beltway across the Patapsco River. Sorry, I'm not from Baltimore.
I'm not going to try.
and this is where Francis Scott Key was inspired to write the words of the U.S. National Anthem in 1814. That's why the bridge was named after him. So this cargo ship, it was known as Dolly, left the port of Baltimore on a 27-day voyage. Less than 30 minutes into the journey, the ship crashed into the support of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. And you can see, obviously, in the video, it kind of hit on the left side. There was at 1:24 the ship's light flicker, so it looked like they were dealing with some power issues. And then 1:27 a.m. the first call was made to the U.S. Coast Guard for assistance. And then the ship lost propulsion and steering capabilities, and then it struck at 1:28. So agencies began receiving multiple emergency calls shortly after the collision. And then the crew issued the Mayday, as we said. So I watched an interesting video of like someone that is familiar with what would be happening in this situation. He was a former captain, and he was saying like the sharp turn at the end implied that there was a basically an emergency turn by dropping an anchor, and it just did not go the right way. There's people that are saying, of course, like all the effects of this, like there's conspiracies going around. Was this an intentional attack? Was this nefarious? It's very possible that it wasn't. It just was they lost power, disaster struck. There are some interesting effects to this. I mean, this is a major port, so ships currently can't get in and out. It's a big for vehicle production. So this is one of the busiest ports for car shipments, handling more than 750,000 vehicles in 2023. This is according to Maryland Port Administration. It's the largest U.S.
cars port. Come in there.
It's the largest U.S. port by volume for handling farm and construction machinery as well as agriculture products. Overall, it seems like, and this is again from someone who's familiar with this, doesn't seem like people are very freaked out about the effects. It's not great, but it's not like imports or exports are cut off across the country. No toilet paper shortages in sight is a note that I got from her.
But it's kind of it is going to slow down the port of Baltimore for sure.
For sure,
like you say, the foreign cars, the farm equipment stuff, and you can't necessarily automatically go to another port. So they're going to try to clear up this
water
pathways as fast as they can. And then, you know, the other thing too about it is that, of course, traffic in Baltimore is already a problem, and you've just cut off a major artery of traffic, and so that's going to take a while to get any kind of a bridge going. Thanks. In its path. So it's a tough break. Horrible.
Yeah. And the president has already spoke on it. Basically, I wasn't really even sure, like I've never even seen a bridge collapse, but the Department of Transportation is expected to release emergency response funds. It looks like FEMA is going to step in. Biden ordered the Army Corps of Engineers to deploy to the scene to help clear the area under the bridge. It's looking like it's going to take about 2 years to probably rebuild. Another interesting tidbit on it too is that ship Josh, if I could finish, thank you. The ship, the Dolly, said that it had already been in some collisions, so the ship itself might have been a little suspect. There was already some damage to it, so that kind of pushes it back against a lot of the conspiracies out there. I don't know. From what I'm seeing, it just seems like it's very possible that this could have happened. Very unfortunate, but yeah,
tragic.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the timeline of the bridge. My guess is that it'll end up taking, ironically enough, I think it'll take less time than we think. The fact is, you know, there was the bridge in both Minneapolis, Florida. And then there also the one. Well, the Florida one's a little bit unique because the waterway there is not massive. But the bridge in Minneapolis, the I-35W bridge that went down, of course, that wasn't over water. Or maybe it was, that was over the river. So, and then the one in Pennsylvania that went down, both of those circumstances, they got the initial timeframes that they gave on were surpassed. And that's because the thing is that our country, we have so many regulations that are tied up in all this stuff, all these studies that need to be done. And, you know, we got to make sure, you know, the water tables and everything. And then, but if you really set your mind to it, and governments, you know, like, so in other words, if you're going to build a brand new bridge somewhere else, it might take you 2 years. But if you want to just replace an existing one, they'll find ways to cut through the red tape. You know, the president of the United States can say, no, forget it. Just get it done. And I think they'll probably fast track this one. I think it'll get done faster than you think. I mean, it's not going to be overnight, of course.
For the people of Baltimore and greater DC area, I hope so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, now, for example, there was the bridge in the D.C. area, but I think it was crossing the Potomac going into Maryland, the bypass, and they got that one done in record time as well because it was the bureaucrats in D.C. who were their commute was being affected. So they cut through the red tape fast. So
we'll see. Kara, did you have anything? Sorry, we talked a lot. Did you have anything?
No. I was just going to reference the bridge in Florida after the hurricane.
Okay. Which actually, this person was a part of. The person on her team, I believe, was a part of the response for that.
Did not know that. Cool.
Okay. So next one. This is where I come to the chat a little bit. There's been a lot of buzz about RFK Jr., even within the Loopcast audience, which is interesting. Obviously, big name. He's getting actually a significant amount of support from national polls. So
did you see his commercial?
I did see his commercial. Yeah,
it was way too long. It was really 9 minutes. Way too long for
me. Well, the Super Bowl one wasn't 9 minutes.
Oh, the Super Bowl one was awesome. Yeah.
But the one that Kara and I are talking about, the 9 minute one, was actually really good as well too. It was very good. On the American dream, nostalgia, which is smart for a name like Kennedy.
So Trump should be talking more like that, frankly.
Totally. If there's anyone in the chat that is like a big RFK person, now is the time to make that known. The reason he's coming up is he's officially chosen his vice president. And I'm going to rattle off a few facts before we get into thoughts about her. Her name is Nicole Shanahan. She is the ex-wife to Google co-founder Sergey Brin. So her political past, she's donated a lot of money to Joe Biden, former Democrat. She donated to Marianne Williamson and Pete Buttigieg in the 2020 race. She's also put $150,000 behind L.A. District Attorney George Gascon in 2020 election bid. He is a Soros-backed prosecutor.
Yeah, horrible.
And then she also spent a lot of big money on Measure J, which is an L.A. measure to reroute spending from law enforcement and prisons to social services and mental health treatment. So she has a pretty solid past in Democrat activism. This seems to me like I personally, seeing this, was disappointed because I think RFK Jr. represented, because I actually really like a lot of what RFK Jr. represents. I don't think he's a conservative by any stretch of the imagination, but I love that he's not 80 and he.
No, this is great, though. Straight. This is a great pick for him, don't you think? Think about it this way. His commercials are good, and he talks about this nostalgia back when government was competent and didn't hate you, you know, and you're like, gosh, this is great. And then he picks a Soros-backed lefty who gave money, you know, to all these radical campaigns. And so anyone who could then can say, RFK, man, he says a lot of good things, but I can't support him because he has a communist as his running mate. That sounds good to me. Then you won't fall for the luster of RFK Jr.'s sprinkle dust that he throws every once in a while, because he's just as much of a lefty as she is.
So are you saying that this is going to take more votes away from Biden than
absolutely Trump?
Now, that I see as the big positive is that.
Of course. That's why I'm happy.
I can see that.
In terms of effect, you say he's taking some votes. Josh, do you think that there actually is a serious impact, like a significant impact of his candidacy on Biden support? Like it would take away a real percentage?
Well, I mean, the polling right now shows that RFK Jr. is taking more of a bite out of Biden support than he is of Trump. He's taken from both. But he's taken more of a bite from Biden. And I expect that would continue. Now, of course, when you look at campaigns that are third party, independent campaigns, whatever, in the polling, even as you get late into September or whatever, then the support that they get in the polls is almost always twice what they end up at the ballot box. And so right now, RFK might be at like, you know, 15% or something like that. I expect that number to dwindle further as we get into the campaign. It becomes more binary for people, the different conventions. The thing is, RFK's commercial, the Super Bowl splash was good, but he needs a splash like that every month. And if he had picked somebody outside the box, like an Aaron Rodgers as his running mate, that would have been so unusual or different. That might have kept things going and it would have been lively or interesting. I've never heard from this woman ever before. And if all she's done is given tons of money to left-wing causes, that's not anything that's going to be interesting. You needed somebody who was a truly interesting person as your running mate. And I think he dropped the ball on this one. He needs lots of these different kind of wins for the next 9 months or 6 months or whatever to carry him through towards November. I don't think he's going to have that. And so I think his support gets closer to being about 8 or 9%. And then on election day, does he get 3%? Does he get 4%? I thought he was going to get 2. Maybe he'll get 4.
That's a hot take.
Kara, any thoughts on RFK Jr. VP pick?
No, I was just going to say, it's not necessarily RFK, but I also avid listener of the Loopcast. And I think it was last Friday, Josh, you gave some super interesting stats about polling. And we were talking about RFK, and you didn't talk about RFK in the mix, but I thought that was super interesting.
Oh, the combined days ahead. Okay.
Yeah, the streak on which the candidates are ahead. Now, since we
and then looking at who won and whatnot after that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and Biden has had a good last week or so. So the polls that came out since I mentioned that on Friday, he's gotten closer and he's tied a few more of them. So we'll see. Like I said, you know, things can change. You know, bridge is coming down, probably don't help incumbents, but maybe it might not have an effect. We'll see. You know, there's any number of twists and turns that could happen.
Before we ask Josh this question, because I'm sure he has strong thoughts, Kara, do you have any predictions on a Trump VP pick?
Oh, gosh. I kind of, I mean, at first, I really like Marco. I've always been a Marco fan. J.D. Vance, we love him at CV. But I think now Trump is in that awkward position that he needs to, or I feel like he is, he needs to pick a woman. We've got Kamala VP, we've got RFK running a woman, and it feels to me that it's putting pressure on Trump to pick a woman. So I guess in that vein, Tulsi? I don't know.
But don't you think that, wouldn't it be an extra appeal to Trump to not choose a woman?
He seems counterintuitive. That's what
you know
I
what I mean? That's a little bit of like, everyone else is doing women, we're not going to do it. Yeah, right.
So he goes with
that is very Trump. Yeah.
He takes Rubio. He wants to emphasize that he's getting a lot more Hispanics or Blacks.
Who would a Hispanic woman be that he could pick?
Well, isn't there a gal from? Is my point. I think he takes Marco.
You think he does? What about what was that Hispanic woman from Nevada? Was she? What was her name?
I've heard people throw around Elise Stefanik, or Stefanik. Sorry,
Stefanik.
Which I'm not a huge fan. But isn't there Rosa Luna or something like that?
Well, there's the Anna. Yeah, there's the Anna Luna. She's a congresswoman from
Florida. Florida.
I don't think she.
There was a lady from maybe she was the governor of Nevada or something. She was Hispanic. I don't remember who.
Well, there's Martinez. She was governor of New Mexico, I think.
Oh, maybe it was New Mexico.
Martinez.
Hey, Sonny Hostin's available. No one's picked her yet.
No, I think he.
What do you think about him picking someone like Myra Flores? Do you think she doesn't have enough, like experience?
Wasn't Myra Flores born in Mexico?
Oh, touche. I didn't think about that.
So Marco, if he does, there might be some people ask about this because the Constitution has a penalty if you pick two people from the same state. Basically, the electors from Florida cannot vote for a president and a vice president from their same party. So it's a one state penalty, but Florida has a lot of electoral votes. So if Trump wants to pick Marco Rubio, Trump would basically be required to register as a voter from his house out of Belvedere, New Jersey. So that's an easy way to get around that because that happened in 2000. George W. Bush and Dick Cheney were both residents of Texas at the time. Dick Cheney just went back to his house in Wyoming, registered as a voter there, and that took care of that problem right away. Of course, the left went crazy about it, and they still complained about it, but it had no effect.
Dick Cheney made money off the Iraq War. That's all I'm going to say.
No, I don't like it. You don't. No Dick Cheney fan here.
That was not in the show notes, Tom. Now we're going on a completely different way.
I'm going rogue. I'll start.
That's not rogue. Podcast. Dick Cheney is a horrible human being.
Yeah. All right, Josh and I are on the same page. So this is our little church corner, as we sometimes refer to it. So article in The Loop that got a lot of traction. And I think look for the chat perspective here, looking for Josh in Kara's perspective here. It was about the Invite One Back initiative. So there's an initiative that I think is kind of a part of the National Eucharistic Revival initiative as well. It's an attempt to get lapsed Catholics to come back to church. So the stat that's used is a 2022 Kara study showed a 7% decline in Sunday Mass attendance compared with pre-COVID data. And the significant portion of Catholics lost connection with their local parish during the shutdowns and just never came back. So insert National Eucharistic Revival's Invite One Back initiative. It's offering practical ways to reach out to parishioners who have stopped attending Mass. So this is a multi-year initiative, and some of the recommendations are as follows. Write a handwritten letter or postcard inviting a lapsed parishioner to return to Mass. To give the parishioner a phone call, encourages people to pray. every parish community is unique, so it'd be personalized. So that's the basis. The comment section was very interesting. I'll read some of the response here, but just on first
comment section.
Always. Comment section is always interesting.
Straight to the
comments. Don't read the comments. Are you kidding me? I live for the comments.
The fun
is. I know.
Absolutely. So first off, let's just offer it up for the chat. First impressions off of this, do you think it'll work? Do you have any recommendations yourselves of helping get people back to Mass? But to Josh and Erica, before we get into what other people are saying, do you think this will be a successful initiative, or are we maybe missing the point?
I love it, actually. You just called me Erica. I'm a big fan of this.
Oh, gosh. Carrie, you were doing so well.
Which
I called you
a real honor.
Oh, gosh, a real honor. Badge of approval. So, Josh, you were saying first, you love it.
Well, so, I mean, I actually believe in this. I remember hearing about this, like just asking someone to come with you to Mass is a big thing. And it's very helpful. Why not? A lot of people are afraid to ask. And so I did actually, it was funny because in a previous interview I had with Tim Carney, he mentioned that he came back to Mass because I asked him to, and two other buddies were like, well, come on, why don't you come with me to Mass? And that was kind of the stepping stone to get him to coming back to Mass and getting confirmed. And I was like, I didn't even remember that. I just, you know, it was just natural for me. So I give the credit, you know, to the Holy Spirit. But then my father and my mom both have stopped going to Mass for decades now. And when I come back to Minnesota, my dad, you know, he'd come with me to Mass. And I finally said to him one time, you know, I really love that you come to Mass with me, but you know what would really make me proud, Dad? If you went to Mass when I wasn't here. He's like, oh, you got me on that one. But, yeah. You know, I didn't want to rake him over the coals. I mean, you know, you want to try to propose, not impose. You know, scolding isn't going to be helpful. That's not the way. You got to try to say, you know, I really get a lot out of this myself when I come to Mass. I feel like I'm closer to, obviously, to God. It does heal me. It provides an opportunity for me to get to meet other people too that are in the same struggles that I'm in. And you know, let's go. You know, let's, you know, so I think we should be better about inviting people, and I applaud their effort on this. I do want the Catholic Mass itself to be more reverent and to have more meat, that the homilies to be more edifying and educational. But I can't do, I can't cure everything. What I can do though is try to ask someone to come along.
Control what you can control. Yeah.
I agree. I think it's super important to invite people not only back to Mass, but to vote, to when you have a personal invitation to do something, there's a lot higher likelihood that you're going to do it. So
yeah.
I do think that inviting folks to come back, particularly after COVID and everything, I think is beautiful. I also think that I wish that in tandem with, and maybe it's not too late, with the Eucharistic revival, is I wish that we would focus more on confession. Because I think that is one of it's the hill that I'll always just like kind of die on. But if you want to teach people about the sacredness and beauty and what the Eucharist is, you can't do it by, sometimes masses aren't reverent. Sometimes masses, there are a lot of crazy things happening, but there's confession. And I think that's one of the things that, it's a real beauty of our faith, and I wish that people would invite folks back to Mass, but also to confession.
I want to echo, that's an awesome comment, because the thing is, one of the things that bishops have started to do with the Eucharist is understand that this is something that makes us as Catholics different than anything else. We have actual Jesus. That this is Jesus.
And what better way to tell them?
Well, it's a distinguishing thing. It's different than anything else. And you can say, you know, we come to worship him. We receive him at Mass. We can adore him outside of Mass. Mm-hmm. And confession, to your point, is another distinguishing mark. Like, we need to understand. I think I would just beg our priests to take what Kara's saying seriously. And preach about the sacrament of confession, because you know what? There's a lot of people who don't even realize it, how much they need it. Mm-hmm. And there's so much healing and mercy that comes from it. I know there's a lot of priests. There's a priest shortage. You guys are stretched thin. I understand that. There's a discussion. Father Krupp is a good priest. He's in Michigan. And he was trying to say, look, we're spread a lot really thin, and we're trying to do our best. And Father, my heart goes out to you. I can understand that. I do think the conversation that kind of blew up online a little bit was, there was this little sign that said, you know, try to keep confession quickly and just recount your sins and don't make it a big, like, you know, opening your heart and giving your entire life story. Save that for like an appointment.
Spiritual direction, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, and a lot of Catholics are like, oh my gosh, thank you, that would be lovely. Because, you know, there are oftentimes where you go to confession, it's hard to get to it 3:30 in the afternoon on a Saturday, and you make your plans, and you sit there and you wait 50 minutes, and then you don't even get the sacrament. It can be kind of frustrating because some little old lady is there, and what Father's trying to say is, she might need that. Mm-hmm. And so be a little bit more forgiving. And Father, you got a point there, and I understand. I get it. But I'm wretched, okay? That's why I'm in line.
Yeah, and yeah, there's nuance.
I do feel like we need to preach about it more, and we do need to, you know, receive that sacrament more often.
Yeah, Josh, if I may, if I may humbly interject, I didn't even think about this possibility, but there may be people listening to this right now who could potentially be in the position of having lapsed out of going to Mass either over COVID or at different periods of their lives, or, you know, people are just in different places. Shout out to Ariel. She just brought this up. I think this is something that it's good to think about. Like, everyone has people in their lives that are at different stages. Josh talked about his parents, maybe people even in the audience. Here's your personal invitation. You know, God is waiting for you. Jesus is waiting for you in Mass. Easter is a great time to reengage with going to Mass, and such a beautiful time to be a Catholic. But it's available to you actually daily in a lot of cases, your church communities, and then also for sure on Sundays. So this isn't I think the hard part about this is people bring up the reasons why people have lapsed. And I feel this as someone that was frustrated with the church's response to COVID. When you shut down the sacrament, what does that say to everyone? It says that it's not essential. It says that it's not the core tenet of our faith, something, a hill to die on. And so when people saw that, they're like, oh, well, the church isn't even really taking itself seriously. So, you know, why should I make the fight to go to Mass? That's a problem. Having priests that are not giving homilies with good catechesis is another huge problem. Sometimes they just kind of turn into telling jokes and nah, 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 and then you just go on. People don't get the proper understanding of what's taking place, that good catechesis has been lacking for so long. So really, I want to encourage priests on that. So I think all of the debates that were happening in this comment are really good faith. And people brought up the confession thing too, Kara, so I'm glad we touched on that. Some people were bringing up issues with the liturgy. I think all of that's true. But just the good part about this is a reminder and hopefully an invitation here from the Loopcast. Or if you're sitting listening to this and you're like, I know someone that has lapsed, or I know someone that I could reach out to, now's the time. Go send the invite. There's no better place to be as a Catholic than in Mass in front of the Eucharist. It doesn't get any better than that. So now's the time. But I appreciate both of your perspectives and that we're able to cover this, and really praying for a really beautiful Holy Week, good Easter for everyone here in the audience. Hope you guys are praying for us as well. So we move on now to the Twilight Zone. Let's, you know, ladies first. Kara,
okay.
You'd like to go first. You are up.
Sure. So this one's a little kind of personal. I guess it was a little bit of a backstory here. There was in 2018, I was, where was I sitting? I was on vacation. I'm just trying to remember where I was. I was on Twitter and I retweeted an article that Ross Douthat wrote about banning pornography. And I retweeted the article. I didn't read it. And then I had a friend who texted me and said, oh, I would love to debate this with you. And so I was like, crap, I got to read this article. So I went back and read the article. And then it was like February 2019. And I debated with against a gentleman who, in front of a room full of men, that we need to ban pornography. And I gave a couple different instances of, you know, ways that we can do this and, you know, full out banning it, what that looks like. And one of the suggestions that I gave was age verification laws. And so flash forward, here I am now living in Texas. That all happened in Chicago. Here I am now living in Texas, March 2024. There was a big, I guess, decision from the Texas Fifth Circuit. And now there is Pornhub is not allowed to. Pornhub basically shut down because they put age verification law on the books in Texas. And so
to be explicitly clear, it's not that they can't operate. They just need to comply with the law. And they chose it'd be better for them to leave entirely than comply with a law that says that minors should not be looking at pornography.
Correct. So I feel like that was kind of a cool little twilight zone for me because it took 5 years, 6 years, whatever. But here, what I had said, yeah, it actually happened. And wait, so I was pumped about that.
If I could ask, well, one, is there a video of this debate?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
But so I have all of my notes.
So then second question, how was your argument received broadly? Like, how did you feel like you performed in the debate? Was the message received?
So I had a lot of folks. I guess I take that back. There were only two other women there. Both of them were friends of mine. But other than that, it was a room full of men. And so you can imagine there was a lot of pushback. And a lot of folks thanked me afterwards for the hard take that I debated and so that I did a good job. And also multiple people thanked me. I left faith out of it because I was debating from a libertarian standpoint, or the guy that I was debating was libertarian. So I didn't want it to be like a moral thing. So I left religion out of it. But so it was hard. I think it helped with arguments, and I love to see things like this where we can do this. Conservatives are, you know, shy away from the hard things. And honestly, what I tell folks all the time is Catholics, what we believe as Catholics, we have the answers to everything that plagues society. And this is, yeah, would I like it outright banned, never see it again? Of course. Is this one step in the right direction? Also, yes. And so I think that's a really cool thing. Good news. My good twilight zone.
Really good news. The law is genius. It makes people have to defend wanting to put pornography in front of children.
And it's the same. It's the same way with like books, right? Is they're not actually being banned. You can go and buy them on Amazon, but they don't have to be in libraries. It's not actually being banned. You can still access it.
True. Although,
but kids, maybe
it'd be great if they banned it, though.
It would.
No, I agree.
Interesting, because maybe slightly different, because I think the book people try to pretend like there's not pornography in the book, so like, oh, it's somehow edifying. With like true porn, everyone knows what it is, and they still are like, you know, oh, everyone should be able to access it. The whole libertarian argument for that really bugs me, and I think that's one of the many shortcomings of a libertarian mindset, is to think that there's, from a free speech claim, like people should be entitled to do something that's like soul sucking and morally evil and a drain on society at large. Even if you can come up with the best argument ever, and it's still not adequate for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I used to be a libertarian decades ago. And the one thing that I really never felt libertarianism had an answer for was children.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about maximizing freedom. That's their number one priority. And anytime you had a choice between maximizing freedom and any other good, that other good always lost, and maximizing freedom always won. And so then it became a question of like, well, what about children? I mean, if a man and a woman create a child, that's an instant 18-year obligation on both that man and the woman. And that doesn't maximize your freedom. That's subordinating your own freedom to take care of this child. And then you start to talk about other issues with regards to children and libertarians, that their argument really makes a lot of sense for over 18, But once you start talking about children, it really starts to fall apart. And that's why you see it on this debate, as you mentioned, with requiring, you know, age verification to make sure that 14-year-olds aren't accessing hardcore pornography. And libertarians like, but we want to maximize freedom. And they don't have an answer.
Well, and their view of the common good is that, is freedom with no,
no freedom bound. Over rallies.
Yep. Right. And so that's obviously not what we believe.
Kara, you're a queen. Great job with that.
Thank you.
You're 5 years ahead of your time, but that is really, really.
I had no idea that if I could have looked into a, you know, into the future with Doc from Back to the Future, I had no idea that I would be today talking about this, which is pretty cool.
Does that make
sense? If I nervous? Only had that to like say at the end of the debate, like just you wait, give me 5 years.
Does that make Josh Marty McFly in this situation, or?
Or is Kara the true oracle?
Now we're talking. Josh, your Twilight Zone.
Well, I'm going to do two things. First of all, news came out that McDonald's is going to start offering Krispy Kreme donuts
Josh, nationwide. I can't believe you're doing this.
And I just got to say to my listeners in the South, Krispy Kreme donuts are trash. They are.
I'm going to disagree with you there.
They are garbage. And everyone's like, I have all my friends say, you know, you think you know donuts, Mercer. I know you love donuts.
Are you?
You come down here, you got to try Krispy Kreme donuts,
donut
brand new, fresh. I'm like, I take it. It was like biting a balloon. The thing, what the heck? All the air comes out. This is terrible. They're trash.
Oh,
they're terrible. So it makes sense that McDonald's, which has terrible hamburgers, would have terrible donuts.
Josh, like, it melts in your mouth, dude.
I like Dunkin' Donuts. I went to Dunkin' Donuts this morning.
You think Dunkin' Donuts is better than Krispy? That is a disgusting.
In a landslide.
Oh,
come on.
Josh, have you ever been when the red light is on?
I had fresh donuts from Krispy Kreme, and they're terrible. You don't need to convince me of this.
You're lying.
They're horrible. I still like McDonald's for breakfast.
See, again, disqualifying. You like McDonald's breakfast? And you want to give a take on donuts?
I'm the guy that convinced McDonald's to have breakfast all day long. Come on,
The sausage, the one where they have like the two pancakes, I mean, that's gas. I'll give you
The McGriddle's awesome.
The McGriddle. I'll give you the McGriddle. I'll concede.
Sausage biscuit with egg.
Sorry, Kara, we got a little fired up there.
This is a bunch of – it's hilarious. I was going to ask you, when you like – say you like Dunkin' Donuts, is it the yeast donut or is it the cake donut that you like?
I love sourdough glaze. My favorite.
Should we should recreate
that? Because maybe that's why you didn't like the Krispy Kremes.
Yeah, it's terrible. I don't know why anyone eats it. I can't believe it.
My hot take is that putting McDonald's into your body is just like taking birth control. But that's class one carcinogen.
Yes, get
water though.
Get wrecked.
If you keep eating McDonald's, gals will stay away. No, but that was my one. I'm going to do two Twilight Zone. The other one, it's not Twilight Zone so much, but it's kind of cool. Lawmakers in Georgia are proceeding ahead with plans to make a statue of Clarence Thomas at the state capitol. I tend to believe that you should wait until the person passes on to their eternal reward before you make a statue out of them. And so I would prefer that. But nonetheless, Clarence Thomas definitely deserves a statue. He's awesome.
Okay. We're getting takes rolling in on the donut, and we should have just been a donut podcast. Like, this has generated so much.
Come on, man. Let's go.
Tom, when you first started at CV, didn't we have a donut bracket?
Yes. Oh man, that's a great memory. Yeah. So that was old Chicago office. I was a bright eyed, bushy tailed 12-year-old, and I came into the office on my first day, and this was like it was the best and the worst simultaneously, because people were arguing over what the best donut in Chicago was. And they had all their spots, and they're like, "Let's do a bracket." And so we got samples from each, and we made sure we're gonna do one of the old fashioned, we're gonna do one specialty, and we're gonna do one. I can't remember what the other option was.
I can't either.
And we tried each one, and had way too many donuts at like 10 in the morning. Insane.
Why wasn't
sugar
I consulted
high.
On this?
Yeah, Josh, you weren't there somehow. And we all got like insane sugar highs, and then crashed at 2 p.m. Like, we were all like dead on the desk.
Worthless.
Yeah, right. Worthless. Great first day, though. That was a phenomenal first day.
Was it your first day?
That was my like first or second day. Yeah.
Wow, I don't remember that.
Full story on that. My in-laws, not to dox them, but from Illinois. So I was driving with all of my belongings. Like I was moving that week. All of my belongings were in a parking garage in Chicago. And this is in like 2020.
What could go wrong with that?
Exactly. It was the worst idea ever. I don't know whose idea it was. All my belongings in this car Karras. 2020 because I was moving. And so we were in Chicago.
Chicago was great.
It was great. We were right across from the Bean. And so I was doing all the Chicago sightseeing stuff. And then I literally moved that next week. I moved to Indiana. So
nice.
That was good memories at Catholic Vote, man. So I've almost been here for 4 years. It's just crazy. I've been like reflecting on what that even means. Kara, I mean, you want to talk about being somewhere a long time. You're like the champ of team player.
Yeah, I have a lot of stories about Josh.
Yeah, we're going to – okay, we'll move on now. We'll move on. We don't need to hear any of that. We're going to move on before we get into Josh stories. So as many of you know, I am a big fan of conspiracy theories. So mine is about Big Formula this week, Big Baby Formula. So
– oh, my.
I read an article – it was an investigation into the United States' colonial-like nature of dominating international markets with baby formula. And so really interesting stuff. They went to Thailand. And Thailand actually has a double problem. Their problem is that a decent amount of their babies are morbidly obese. Like if you scroll down in this article, you'll see a picture of the one that went viral. A little bit higher, I think. Oh, yeah, right there on the phone. He went viral for being so obese, and it was because he was drinking not just infant formula, but also they call it toddler milk. So toddler milk was something that was created to make these formula companies money because they could get around regulations that the FDA have on infant formula because it's not technically infant formula, it's toddler milk, and it contains a lot of additives and just a bunch of crap, but they can market it internationally. So they're marketing it to Thailand. So kids are either really obese or really skinny. And so the Thai government was trying to protect their own citizens by passing laws against aggressive advertising of these infant formulas and baby toddlers. And the United States actually threatened to withhold aid to places like Ecuador and other places if they passed these laws, if they didn't rescind them. I think specifically in Thailand.
Hate my own government sometimes.
Exactly.
I really do.
Specifically in Thailand, they were talking about like trade. They were saying like, oh, this would be bad for trade or this wouldn't be a part of like international trade. So you better do this. Otherwise, we're not going to play ball with you. So the toddler milk thing was interesting. I wasn't even aware of that. But this is in like 15 different countries. We've been exposed for interfering in their own lawmaking when it comes to infant formula and this toddler milk. So the stats that I have is more than 1 in 10 Thai children under 5 years old face what researchers call a double burden of malnutrition that leaves some struggling with obesity and others lagging behind growth targets. And then, of course, what could help with all of this? Do you have any guesses?
Breast milk.
Breastfeeding. Correct. Mm. And so there's been aggressive campaigns. It all gets back to we're wrapping this episode in a bow. There's aggressive marketing for these toddler milks and infant formulas and against breastfeeding. So it's not just, hey, we want to sell this stuff. We're going to sell it and discourage what you generate with your own body. And of course, when it comes to breastfeeding, if you start getting a kid on infant formulas and milks, you stop the ability to produce this breast milk. That's all studies show are what's best for your child, can help with cognitive development, connection to the mother, has tons of nutrients. And so it was just another
instance. Better for against getting sick.
Disease as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like,
well, or just colds or whatever, everything. Yeah. Their immunity gets stronger.
I have a quote from Mead Johnson's head of global marketing in 2013, what he was telling investors. We have a proven global demand creation model. Capture baby very early on, often before it's born, hold on to them through feeding and their feeding challenges and extend them as long as possible. That's a quote from 2013. So, yeah, not proud of American government here. And this
send
was actually
that guy
going
to the moon.
This was going on during the Trump administration and during the Biden administration. Neither have done anything to solve this. They continue to push these interests of big companies like Abbott and other producers of infant formula and what's called toddler milk now. And it just reminded me of when we went on our staff retreat to Our Lady of La Leche and how beautiful and striking that was to see. Our Our Lady breastfeeding Jesus. It just, it always reminds me of their humanity, which is sometimes hard for me to grasp, but Jesus and Mary, of course, both fully human. And that connection between mother and child, it all happens supernaturally. It reminded me of the birth control conversation we were having later as well. And there's been different wars, even in America, over whether or not you should breastfeed or should have formula. And it also it intersects as well in like women joining the workforce. So women joining the workforce, the push to get that to happen, how do you make that happen? You get on birth control and you start giving your kid formula because you don't have time to breastfeed. And so, yeah, I was just thinking a lot about actually Brian, president of CV. I think he has a story about his mother-in-law being the founder of this thing called the La Leche League.
His grandmother-in-law.
Four moms in suburban Chicago just getting together in the living room being like, that was when there was really aggressive pushes against breastfeeding.
That's right.
And they said, we need to get back to promoting this as, of course, like the natural solution to all of the ails that we're seeing. And they, it's now like a $1 billion global agency, just teaching people how to do it, giving resources, encouraging it, because it's often stigmatized in a lot of countries, especially in America. I mean, you want to talk about corporate culture. A lot of places, it's like super stigmatized, even breastfeed or like the fact that you would even dare stay home with your children to raise them. That's a hot conversation. So,
or in our country where people feel like you've got to like go leave to another room, because if you actually expose like 1% of the breast, people might freak out. It's like, stop it. You're being an idiot. Who cares if she wants to breastfeed right there? Like, how is it ruining your mood? Like, because men have decided that the woman's breast is only to be thought of as sexual. Mm-hmm. And therefore, if a woman is naturally feeding her baby, they got to freak out, men and women both. And I'm like, just shut up. Actually,
gets back to birth control, gets back to pornography, gets back to infant. I mean, talk about wrapping this show in a bow.
I know.
This is podcasting right here. High level. Sorry, Kara.
I was just going to say that we could go off on a whole other tangent of like food and how all of that ties in.
Oh yeah. And I also saw, not to get back into the food conversation, but Chick-fil-A reneged on their commitment to antibiotics in their chicken. Chick-fil-A.
To do what?
So they made a promise to never put antibiotics in the chicken that they serve, and they just reneged on that promise. They made it in like 2019, and they just said they're going to be putting it in now. Come on, guys. My pleasure. Really?
Can you imagine, though, like if the people who run Chick-fil-A actually ran our government? That bridge would be fixed in Baltimore like in three
You're right.
weeks.
By the end of, the month. Which maybe, that would point. Be hard. Yeah.
So, Kara, thank you for joining this episode. If people want to be introduced to Catholic Vote as, I forget her name, but she said she was introduced by her. Shout out to her.
Leslie.
How would they be able to interact, get in touch? I don't know what you want to put out there.
I mean, people can email me directly, Kara@CatholicVote.org. You can find me on Twitter @KMoan, or you can, we have both, I travel the West Coast, but there's also folks who travel through the Midwest and on the East Coast. And so I'm on a great team of folks that really share the mission and everything that we're doing here at Catholic Vote. So while I don't personally get to North Carolina or Maine, for example, there's people all over that do that as well. So reach out to, info@CatholicVote, and we can connect you with the proper person. Also, the best thing that people can do to support the work at Catholic Vote is to become a champion. That's the way that it helps us every day put on awesome programs like this. And
actually, we have a gift going out to everyone who's a champion in the next few weeks. The champions are going to be the first ones to get our brand new book.
Mm.
And it's coming out just in about 5 weeks. And
for God, country, champion, and sanity, right?
That's it. And they will get that copy. So if you want to join right now to be a champion, $10 a month, you'll be the first one to get that book. So
answer the call to Kara. Champions.
That's right.
Kara, are you also available for pornography debates as well?
Oh, yeah. Apparently, I can still I can
you
do
still
it.
Got it? You still got your fastball?
Happy to do it.
I'm glad you didn't.
Happy to share my notes.
Drop the doc. But yeah, so if you want to help us out, the best way to become a champion, catholicvote.org/champions, or you can go to loopcast.org. You'll find a place to support us. We appreciate our champions so much. It's the only reason we're able to do what we can do, or just anyone that donates. We really appreciate you guys. If you want to help us out, share the show, like this episode on YouTube, subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, leave us a review over at Apple Podcasts or Spotify, 5 stars if you please. If you have questions or have mailbag content you want us to cover on the show, loopcast@catholicvote.org. I haven't gotten any grammar comments lately, so I'd say we've been doing good. I hear when I mess up, I hear about it. So if you want to correct my grammar, loopcast@catholicvote.org.
We've been doing well, actually.
It's just street grammar. I like it.
All right, so I might be getting some emails for that one. We're not going to be – so there's going to be no Friday episode, no Monday episode. We will see you guys live again on Wednesday, 11 Eastern time. Enjoy Easter. Such a great time to be a Catholic, great time to be with your families. Hope you all have blessed Easter.
Enter into the Triduum.
He has risen, truly. Really not looking yet. Forward to that. Not yet.
Well, I mean.
Don't say the A word yet.
Jared, come on now. This is, you know, don't get ticky-tack with me. I appreciate Kara coming on. She will be back, and we hope you guys have a great Wednesday. We will see you guys on the next one.
God bless.